I'd like to call the. Is this on, Alan? I'd like to call the meeting of the Joint House Senate Transportation Finance Transportation Committee to order. And again, thank you all for being here. And just to, we have some procedures we want to go through and expedite the meeting too. And I just want to turn it over temporarily for to my co-chair, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Chairman Leader. August 1st was a dark day in Minnesota's history, and this committee has been called together in short order to understand better the process by which this bridge is going to be put back up on I-35. First, I'd like to take a moment of silence so that we can all clear our minds and think about the folks that were lost. Thank you. Chair Leader, we're here to discuss several aspects of the I-35 bridge. The legislature and the public in general don't have the understanding that we need to make decisions and help where we can to expedite the rebuilding of this bridge and the movement of this corridor forward. We would like to keep this discussion limited basically in three areas. One is the design of the bridge and what all that entails, including design build and any other mechanism that MnDOT is going to use to build this. The second is the financing. There's a lot of questions about what the $250 million can be spent on, what it can't be spent on, how much the bridge is going to cost, these types of things. We need to have those. The other thing is, who's in charge? We've been hearing all along that there's this agency's in charge, that agency's in charge. Who's in charge of the site, and who's the project manager? Who's going to be the person that's going to bring all of these different entities together to make sure that this happens as quickly as possible? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. And again, I certainly want to express my condolence to the events that have happened in the past week or more. It's unfortunate that we have to meet under these situations to look at it, but as Senator Murphy pointed out, we want to look ahead and look at the future, how we're going to address it. So also, this, in the event that you want to sit down, there's an overflow in room 5, which is two stories below us. If you want to sit down there, it's going to be, I believe, our video down to that area. So if some of you don't care to stand, if you want to sit, you can get down there. We assume we'll be through it at least 2 hours. The first thing I'd like to do quickly for the members that may not know each other and also for the audience, if you'd quickly identify yourself, only your name and city you're from. No speeches or anything else. We want to get through as quickly as we can, but we certainly want to recognize who's on the committee. Senator Dole, would you? Dole? Would you want to start? We go around that way.
I'm Senator Dole from Senate District 40, covering Burnsville and Bloomington. And 35W crosses the Minnesota River right through the heart of my district.
And the gentleman on the right?
Senator Joe Gimsey from Wilmer, representing Candio High Pope and western third of Stearns County.
Actually, for the Senator reps, a lot of times the county doesn't mean as much as if you give us one sitting, we can expedite it perhaps too.
Senator Terry Bonoff, District 43, which is Minnetonka, Plymouth, and Medicine Lake.
And I'm Kathy Saltzman, State Senator from Senate District 56, which is Woodbury, Lake Elmo, and Stillwater, and all the villages along the St. Croix River.
Senator Jim Carlson from Burnsville and Eagan.
Dan Larson, State Senator from Bloomington.
Good afternoon, I'm Julianne Ortman from San Jose, and I represent Carver and Scott counties up to Norwood, Young America.
I'm State Senator Scott Dibble. I represent District 60, which is much of southwest Minneapolis and a portion of downtown Minneapolis.
Rod Skoy, state senator from Clearbrook, Minnesota, northwest part of the state.
Jen Olson, state senator, District 33. I live in Minnetrista, which is in western Hennepin County.
Senator Mike Dunbauer, Senate District 48. I live in East Bethel, but you'd more recognize Elk River, Ramsey, and Anoka from my district.
Senator Keith Langseth, Moorhead, Detroit Lakes, Breckenridge, Wheaton.
Senator Ann Rust, I live in New Hope. My district is New Hope, Crystal, Robbinsdale, the northeast corners of Golden Valley, and Plymouth in Hennepin County.
Billy Ballin, I'm the committee administrator for Senator Murphy in the Senate Transportation Policy and Budget Division.
Steve Murphy, Red Wing.
And Bernie Leader, Crookston.
I'm Abby Mann, the administrator for the House Transportation Committee.
Dan Haynes, the House.
Susie Maher, House Transportation Committee Legislative Assistant.
Corinne Zewers, House Fiscal Analyst.
Ron Earhart, State Representative of Dynamo.
Frank Hornstein, State Representative from Southwest Minneapolis.
Melissa Hartman, State Representative for Brooklyn Park and Coon Rapids.
Michael Nelson, State Representative for the southern half of Brooklyn Park.
Representative Doug Magnus, I represent the southwest part of the state.
Representative Shelley Medor from Apple Valley, Burnsville.
Representative Linda Slocum, 63B, East Richfield, Eastern Central, Bloomington.
Representative Sandy Mason, and I represent a portion of Burnsville and Egan, 38A.
Representative Lyndon Carlson, 45B. I represent Crystal, Robbinsdale, and Golden Valley.
Mary Liz Holberg, Lakeville.
Representative Lawrence Goldberg, live in Grand Rapids.
Representative Al Doty, Little Falls, Camp Ripley area, 12B.
Will Morgan, state representative from Burnsville and Savage.
Alice Huston, I represent the Midway area in St. Paul, Como Park, City of Falcon Heights, and the area along Highway 280.
And I'm Mike Beard, state representative for Shakopee and Prior Lake.
Senator Rick Olsen from Chisago County and Sunrise Township.
Senator Patricia Torres-Ray, represent District 62, Southeast Minneapolis.
I'm Nee Moore, I represent Senate District 67, which is the east side of St. Paul.
Senator Dick Day, Owatonna.
Senator Amy Cope, Buffalo, representing Wright County.
Senator Michelle Fischbach, Senate District 14, which is just west of St. Cloud.
Thank you. We also have many other senators and representatives on both sides. We didn't have room at the table, but I think we will, unless they specifically, they can participate in case they have a question when we get down the road. To start the portion, we have some members of the congressional staff that want to make a short presentation. Is Elena Peterson from Congressman Oberstar? I presume this is going to be shorter than Congressman Oberstar's speeches, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you, he wrote it himself. He's running in Senate to me, so it's in between now.
Okay.
Chairman Leader and Chairman Mr. Congress, Murphy, along with members of the committee, my name is Alana Peterson, and I am Congressman James Oberstar's District Director of Field Operations. The Congressman asked me to come here today to distribute copies of his proposed legislation, the National Highway System Bridge Reconstruction Initiative, and read a formal statement. As you know, Congressman Oberstar was on the floor of the House managing the debate on the Water Resource Development Act, which would give some relief on infrastructure to cities and municipalities, when he received the following message. The I-35 bridge has collapsed in the Mississippi River, and as many as 20 cars have gone in the water. One school bus is involved, but preliminary reports say the kids got out. Minneapolis EMS has dispatched everything it has to the scene. The congressman paused the debate to tell his fellow members of Congress about the tragedy. Later, he moved to suspend the rules on the floor so that members of the Minnesota delegation could make statements, allowing Congress and the nation to grieve and pray with us, and as rescuers did their work on the scene. As the night progressed, the congressman monitored developments closely and spoke with Secretary of Transportation Mary Peters. By midnight, she had outlined a plan to get Minnesota the funding it will need to begin the process of replacing the bridge. The next morning, he introduced H.R. 3311, Every member of the Minnesota delegation immediately co-sponsored the bill. Congress passed the bipartisan legislation in just 2 days, and the president signed it into law on August 6th. Congressman Oberstar is ready to work with Minnesota as a partner in addressing the tragedy of the I-35 bridge collapse, and as a partner in building a truly world-class transportation system that moves the Minnesota economy forward. I'll read his statement this morning. Thank you for the hearing you are conducting today on the I-35 bridge tragedy. Present and future generations of our state will benefit greatly from the work of this Joint Committee on the Bridge issue. Let me offer a national context for your inquiry. One of every 8 bridges in the U.S. is structurally deficient. Of the 597,340 bridges in the U.S., 154,101 are deficient, including 73,784 structurally deficient bridges and 80,317 functionally obsolete bridges. These high numbers are due in part to the age of our national bridge portfolio. One half of all bridges were built before 1964. Interstate system bridges, which were built primarily in the 60s, are in the same period of their service life. 44% of the interstate bridges were constructed in the 60s, and concrete and steel superstructures on the interstate highway system are an average of 35 to 40 years old. The national highway system is 162,000 miles highway network, which includes 46,747-mile interstate system. The national highway system makes up 4.1% of the total U.S. mileage, but carries 45% of vehicle miles traveled nationwide. The 116,172 national highway system bridges are even more critical to travel and to the nation's economy. They carry 70% of all bridge traffic. According to the U.S. Department of Transportation, 6,175 national highway system bridges are structurally deficient. Almost half of these structurally deficient bridges are on the interstate highway system. 2,830 structurally deficient interstate system bridges. According to the U.S. DOT, the National Highway System Bridge investment backlog is estimated to be $32.1 billion. Here in Minnesota, the U.S. DOT lists 1,135 bridges structurally deficient. 20 years ago, on December 1, 1987, I held hearings on bridge safety, which exposed alarming flaws in the federal and state bridge inspection program. According to Dr. Gerald Donaldson of the Center for Auto Safety, our national bridge program is in serious trouble. The safety of millions of Americans has been jeopardized by inept federal stewardship over bridge inspection and rebuilding efforts. The states have misspent millions of scarce federal aid bridges dollars through dereliction of their responsibilities to the traveling public. One of the most fundamental defects of our bridge program is the persistent failure of the states to perform reliable, cost-effective maintenance of our nation's bridges in compliance with federal statutory responsibilities. Bridge maintenance is in the Stone Age. The Reagan administration paid no heed to these warnings, nor did the various state governments. My new role as chairman of the Committee on Transportation Infrastructure, I have made bridge safety and repair the first order of business on our agenda when the House reconvenes after Labor Day. We will hold a hearing on September 5th on the National Highway System Bridge Reconstruction Initiative, which I have introduced, outlined you have at the table. I encourage your committee to inquire into the downsizing of MnDOT's engineer staff. MnDOT has long been known for high quality of its professional engineers and its high standards. The ranks of that staff, however, have been depleted in recent years and to the detriment of the public oversight of departmental work. An increasing volume of engineering work is contracted out and the remaining staff are stretched thin with their oversight responsibilities. Many contractors in the private sector have expressed to me their great concern over the downsizing of MnDOT engineer staff. It seems to me this would be an appropriate time to begin the rebuilding of that staff and to regain public confidence that the state highway and bridge infrastructure program is on sound and progressive footing. I look forward to meeting with Chairman Steve Murphy of the Senate Committee of Transportation and Chairman Bernie Leader whenever I can be of service to you. That concludes my statement.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson, and thank Congressman Oberstar for his efforts. Josh Strachka of Congressman Betty McCollum's office.
Hello, Chairman Leader, Chairman Murphy, committee members. Nancy is passing around testimony from Congresswoman McCollum. I'm a congresswoman's district director here in the 4th District, and she asked that I deliver this testimony today to you. Chairman Leader, Chairman Murphy, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to offer my testimony at this joint hearing of the Minnesota House and Senate Transportation Committee. I appreciate your leadership in calling this important hearing. Just 2 weeks after the collapse of the Interstate 35W bridge over the Mississippi River, our community continues to mourn the victims of this unthinkable tragedy. Even today, as we discuss building a new structure, recovery officials are showing dignity and honor to the victims by putting their lives on the line to reunite the bodies of 4 missing individuals and their families. Watching this catastrophe from my office in Washington, the shock and horror of the devastation hit home in a terrible way. But I was also filled with great pride to see Minnesotans show courage and common sense by coming together to care for strangers who needed help. Now we must show these same Minnesota values. We need to show the political courage to make the right decision and old-fashioned common sense to build the right bridge. With the leadership of Congressman Keith Ellison, Congressman Jim Oberstar, Chairman of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, and the entire Minnesota delegation, Congress has already taken the first step toward recovery. Immediately following the collapse, in an overwhelming show of bipartisan unity, the U.S. House of Representatives voted 421-0 to authorize $250 million in federal emergency funds to rebuild the I-35W bridge and reconnect our community. However, many people have expressed to me their extreme dismay at the frenzied rush to replace the bridge. A tragedy of this magnitude demands that we take a collective breath and assess the shortcomings of the old structure and the challenges of our future transportation needs. This assessment must be made before we embark on a surge strategy to complete what will be the most significant new bridge in Minnesota. This new 35W bridge that we will collectively build will reconnect our vital link and serve our community for the next 100 years. Our community deserves to be included in the discussions about the design and scope of this bridge and how it will meet our needs now and in the future. Our community deserves to understand and evaluate the options and ask questions. Unfortunately, it appears that hate is now governing how we move forward on planning and construction. I join Minneapolis Mayor Archie Rybeck and many others who believe that this bridge should be designed for the potential of light rail transit in the future. Light rail is part of our comprehensive metropolitan transportation system, and failure to include LRT in the design for this major metropolitan river crossing would be irresponsible. Tax dollars are scarce, and we cannot afford to miss an opportunity to look to the future to address congestion and reduce dependence on fossil fuels. We know this bridge can be built quickly, but it must be built right. If ever there was an occasion to engineer the strongest bridge possible, this is it. If due diligence requires requires a few extra weeks to get the job done right, Minnesota will stand by that decision. Planning for a bridge for the next 100 years, 3 generations, does not happen overnight, and it does not happen over 2 weeks. When appropriate and prudent, we agree that waivers should be granted, but cutting red tape should never mean lifting protections, like data staple, which has been part of federal and state contracts when taxpayer dollars are spent to ensure the best labor is used. Chairman Murphy, Chairman Leader, committee members, your job is to ask tough questions today, and I am pleased that you called this important hearing. I need to hear the answers, and so does the public. If we rush into the design and construction of a new bridge without asking questions and without due diligence, we risk building a functionally obsolete bridge before it even opens. We cannot afford to make that mistake. The collapse of the I-35W bridge was a grave infrastructure failure and a serious human tragedy. I hope we learn from this tragedy that a thorough assessment of need and a robust new commitment in Washington and Minnesota is needed to invest in the infrastructure that keeps American people safe and moving. It is clear that federal emergency funds can be used, along with other federal, state, and local resources, to design and build a bridge with improvements that meet the needs of our community. I want to remind everyone that Congress has authorized these funds. It has not yet appropriated them. I am listening to Mayor Rybeck of Minneapolis, Governor Pawlenty, and the entire community. As a member of the Appropriations Committee in the U.S. House of Representatives, I am committed to making the investments required to plan for our safety and our future. And I sincerely hope that Governor Pawlenty will partner with the Minnesota Legislature, the Minnesota Congressional Delegation, as well as my colleagues on the Appropriations Committee, to ensure that Minnesota's needs are met. In addition, I hope that Congress and the White House take a lesson from the example set by Minnesota neighbors who came to put the needs of their fellow citizens and their communities first. Thank you, Chairman Leader and Chairman Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Strachan. Certainly those questions that were raised, we hope we're addressing those. I'd just like to point out, too, I believe we have Commissioner Molnauer, Deputy Commissioner Freeze, and also Bob McFarland in the audience. I believe they're up on our left. Right. Thank you for coming. Again, our intention here is to look to the future and determine where and who and how we're financing, who's building it, who's in charge. And we do have the people we believe that will answer our questions, and they will give us a very short presentation, not even presentation, because basically we are going to ask questions, we believe. And we start out with the MnDOT component first, and that's District Engineer Connie Sa-Chiban, and also John Chigalow is a project manager, design-build project manager, and Abby McKenzie from the Director of Office and Investment Management. Welcome to the committee. I think three of you can get up there. Okay. I presume, Mr. Connie, that you'll make a short presentation, because we're going to work you over afterwards.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I can make it in 5 minutes.
Okay.
There are some things I do need to say.
We've already cut it in half. He told me 10 minutes once, so that's great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Leader, and Mr. Murphy, and the members of the committee. I really thank you for the opportunity to be here. First thing I need to say, we have a lot...
Would you say your name for the record? I'm sorry, I didn't mention.
My name is Connie Sahibjan, K-H-A-N-I. Last name is S-A-H-E-B-J-A-M. It's a complicated Norwegian name, so...
Very.
Thanks for inviting us. The first thing I need to say is I am extremely proud to be part of the Department of Transportation and being part of this organization that has a long history of doing good things and will continue to do so. We have a lot of our staff folks here who are working on different aspects of this disaster and our recovery to build a new bridge here, in case anybody has any questions. The very first day after the collapse, we were in a meeting in the mayor's office, and Secretary Peters was there, and she was amazed that overnight we already had barrels up and traffic control, and everything happened overnight, basically. And I was there all night to witness that, and I'm really proud that some of our maintenance folks are here to hear that. The same thing goes true for our traffic people, our traffic engineers, our design engineers, and the team that we put together that John will run. With regard to the new bridge, there has been a lot of cooperation going on with various cities, with our sister agency, the Met Council, especially the city of Minneapolis. We've had a great relationship with the city folks working toward designing a bridge that will accommodate future projects that the city would like to do and building the right thing. We've had a disaster here. We had an emergency declaration. There is a gap in the system, and the system is a local system. It affects the local people in Minneapolis. About half of the people that travel that bridge are local folks. It impacts people like myself who live in Eden Prairie but work in Roseville. I drove over that bridge twice a day. It's a regional project and it's a national interstate. So that's why we had the federal folks here immediately the next day, and then they responded with dollars. So we all have a common goal here to replace this bridge. The question has become how fast you want to do it. The need is there for commercial traffic, 5,700 commercial vehicles a day, 141 vehicles a day. And our goal...
141,000,
yes. First, when this happened, some folks were asking me, how long is it going to take? I said, well, I figure probably 2 to 2.5 years, maybe. And then I find out we can do it much faster than that and get it open by end of next season. I was amazed, and I think the public would probably want to see us do it as fast as we can, just considering everything else that we need to do for the region. In a process like this, it's becoming very obvious that this is not a normal way of doing business. Not too many things are normal with this. The environmental approvals have been fast-tracked and streamlined. To add to Congresswoman McCollum's letter, I think there was the word wavering environmental process. We are not wavering any environmental process. It's all being fast-tracked, and it's all based on what we have in our ER. Emergency relief documents, and it's being done according to federal law. We have fast-tracked our team, put a team together. Our public involvement has been going much faster. We've been meeting today. We're going to meet after this meeting at 5:30. This meeting is not a normal meeting. So everything has been going at a faster pace, and also the process of selecting a contractor and also the construction process. And I know you mentioned design build, and we can talk about some of that, some of those questions if you'd like. I would like to assure you safety and quality and the interest of the region will not be compromised by building this bridge. Nobody wants to build a bridge that's going to be functionally obsolete the day it opens. Engineers don't operate that way. Planners don't operate that way. Again, we will not compromise any of those. Just because it is a design-build project and fast-track, there are control mechanisms that will help with that. I'll stop. I won't talk so much. I have a lot more things to say, Representative, but... one thing I'd like to say that we have a great team put together. I'm hoping that this all comes to a resolution pretty quick so we can get to work. And I'm looking forward to this. And I think you will be proud of us when we're done with this structure.
Thank you. And we're withholding questions till short presentations of each of you. Appreciate that, because I think... some of the questions you raised are definitely not questions, but I mean, those were the issues that I think is concern of the committee. Mr. Sigal, if you would identify yourself and indicate what your function is. And I presume, Mr. Sigal, and maybe getting ahead of it, but I believe you're going to be the person in charge of the design build program. So if you just touch on the design-build process, I'd appreciate it, because we're going to have definitely questions in that.
Okay,
good. Did you want him, or do you want the...
I'll just jump in when I need to.
Oh, okay. That's
My name is John Tiglow. I'm a project manager for the reconstruction of the 35W bridge. And design build isn't new to Minnesota. Design build's been used since the early around 2000. I've been on a few design build jobs since that legislation was passed, and it is a process that we feel that has been very successful when used. It's a process that's shown us that the delivery of these projects can be done in an accelerated time frame, quickly, safely, high quality, and earlier than the anticipated scheduled completion date, and within a very close percentage, within approximately 2 to 3% of the budget when bid. So the overruns in costs are very low. The time frame of completion of the work is very fast, and the quality we feel is very good. So as far as the overall process, we're very comfortable with using design build as part of this delivery process. Now, there has been a lot of questions regarding the public involvement process. One thing that design build has done on Highway 52 and other projects is the public involvement process has been very involved. I think the public perception of the Highway 52 project in particular was extremely good, and the results of that process, I was part of that, and we performed a very intensive public relations aspect to that project, and continually communicated progress of the job or resolved issues with the residents adjacent to that project in a real-time manner. So public involvement, I feel very confident moving forward with design build as far as public involvement. The public involvement as far as design aspect, we have met with a group, started meeting with a group to discuss context-sensitive design, and I think we have a good approach in dealing with the context-sensitive design to make sure that this bridge is not only functional but fits within the area that it's going to be built within and doesn't take away from those characteristics of that area. And I think the full staff of the meeting that we had, we are going to have a series of meetings to discuss those types of principles, and we will be talking to the design build team and making sure that type of those interests and principles are incorporated into the design. Involvement of the cities and counties. I think the counties that have been involved and the cities that have been involved, I think, have been very complimentary to the projects that have been involved with design build. I think their level of input and their ability to provide input as the design progresses is unprecedented as far as meetings with us on a daily basis sometimes. Weekly for sure. There will be different meetings and discuss different issues, but as those meetings are dictated by the need for decisions to be made in a timely manner. And what design build really does is it brings a collaborative effort between the contractors and MnDOT and the local partners, cities and counties, and the other groups to make those decisions in a timely manner to progress that project and move that design forward. So as far as the public involvement process, as part of the design and public relations, I'm very confident in what we can do with design build. Design parameters, we are developing design parameters associated with design build for the design build team to determine things such as structure types, and those structure types will be guided by the context-sensitive design parameters that we are developing now, as I mentioned earlier. There is some flexibility in the parameters, and we've been working with the city and county, Hennepin County and Minneapolis, regarding some issues they have on the north side of the bridge to address concerns related to impact with right-of-way when and if they decide to build a new interchange at University Avenue and 4th Street. So there are some flexibility in the design that allows us to minimize the increase in elevation of those bridges when they are reconstructed. Those bridges, for now, for instance, are a shallow structure. They'll become longer to add more capacity under those bridges, and when they do, more depth of those structures will be needed. So we'll have to modify the grade or the approaches of the roadway to account for that. And we can build that flexibility into the design parameters and the guidance that we give the design build team
to ensure that that type of minimal impact can occur. So those, that's just an example of what we can do as far as guiding the design builder to get an end result that is not only something that MnDOT wants, but it's something that the city and the county are trying to achieve. Quality, as Connie mentioned, is not something that I believe is sacrificed, either in the design or in the construction. There's mechanisms that are in place as far as quality review of the design associated with multiple tiers or redundancies associated with plan review, and making sure that those plans are developed in a manner that's consistent with the guidelines or the design requirements of the certain structure type that they choose. Not only does the contractor have that responsibility, but MnDOT has that responsibility in reviewing those criteria and ensuring that those design requirements are followed and adhered to. And so those are redundancies that are in place to ensure that we are getting a high quality design. So on the other hand, in construction, there's also responsibilities placed on the contractors to monitor their quality of their product. And MnDOT will also play a role in that to verify that they are following the specifications that are required for them to build the project. So quality, again, will not be compromised because it is a design build project. I guess
we have another opinion. Quick statement I'd like to make. We have done 79 design build projects in the state with our project, the Rock Creek 2 down in District 6 and the ones in the metro. Design build is not a delivery method for every project. But if there was one project that you would tell me that you can only do one project design build, this would be the one, because this will truly take advantage of the combining the design and construction time, plus taking advantage of the innovation that the contractor is tapping into, the experience and innovations that they have to help us get a project delivered soon.
Thank you. We are trying to get an overview from all three of you first before we have questions. And certainly everything Mr. Sigler said what they do, but it's not any different what you normally do. So I want the audience of the committee to think that anything special is being done on design build, because you're doing it the same way you normally do on a contract. Isn't that basically correct? And that's the question I'm just going to pose. I don't want to answer it now, but definitely we shouldn't be lulled to sleep by design build, in my opinion. We want to go through that. Let's see.
The one thing I'd like to make a point of is the amount of effort and collaboration that's occurred to date. You know, I think there is a misperception out there that we're rushing this through, but because of the emergency, I think it's been incredible from my viewpoint to watch the different agencies, federal, state, and local, come together to help solve problems and come to the table with the frame of mind to help move forward and solve this problem as quickly as possible. We worked with the Coast Guard, the Corps of Engineers, the National Park Service, the DNR, the PCA, State Historic Preservation Office, on and on and on, local, state, and federal. And you know, at this point right now, our permitting process is as far along as we have been in design build jobs that hardly have been left. So you know, we have made great strides in acquiring permits that are required to sustain it, as Tom mentioned. It's something that we're not bypassing any environmental processes. The people have really come to the table and worked to help move forward with this project, and it's been a really incredible effort in collaboration and cooperation.
Yeah, I'm sure there's no one questioning the diligence and the quality of what you're doing. We will. We will get into the questions again. I don't want to belittle what you're saying, but I really appreciate the fact that you're stressing the fact that everybody's working at the cooperation, because that's what certainly should happen in an emergency, and it is working apparently, like you say, and it's working real well. Ms. McKenzie, would you want to kind of go through the financial portion, and then we can open it up for questions? And again, the questions that are going to come up, you're aware of who's paying what, and what portion money is coming, where is it coming from, and all of that. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol Leader, Chair Murphy. For the record, my name is Abby McKenzie, and I'm Director of the Office of Investment Management for MnDOT. Our principal source of funding for the repair and replacement of the I-35W bridge will be the Emergency Relief Program. The Emergency Relief Program is FHWA's program for aiding in the repair and replacement of roads and bridges that are damaged as a direct result of natural disasters or catastrophic facility failure. And I'm going to refer to the Emergency Relief Program in my testimony as the ER program. The general requirements for the ER program is that to be eligible for ER funding, the road or bridge in question must be on the federal aid system that is not classified as a local road. The program provides for in-kind replacement or repair of the facility to current design standards. Eligible repair work falls into two categories. Emergency repairs are those repairs during and immediately following the emergency to restore essential traffic, establish detours, secure the site, and remove debris. Permanent repairs are the repairs undertaken to restore or replace the highway or bridge. Like all federal aid programs, the ER program is a reimbursable program. We pay the bills first, in MnDOT's case, with state funds, and FHWA will reimburse us and our partners for costs that they determine to be eligible. In Minnesota's case, in the case of this specific event, costs will be eligible at a rate of 100% reimbursable up to the appropriated amount. Now, this is in contrast to our typical federal programs that require, depending on the program, a 10 or 20% match. We are grateful for FHWA, who has been really a wonderful partner to us in these last 2 weeks. And they have made available $55 million of ER funding that is available immediately, currently, to the state. And MnDOT is working with our local partners to prepare the necessary documentation to receive those funds. And I have handed out, a letter from Tom Sorrell, who is the FHWA division administrator, which is a really good summary of the ER program, what's eligible, what's not eligible, and the like. And actually, I think Tom is here. Yeah, okay, he is here. And so, you know, if you really want the details, we'll call on Tom. A total of $250 million for an additional $195 million has been authorized by the Congress and the President of the United States. Those funds must still be appropriated by Congress. Current information suggests that the earliest this could happen would be around the 1st of October. After appropriation, those funds must be then made available to us in the state. Typically, once an appropriation occurs, it takes 4 to 6 weeks for us to actually receive the funds for reimbursement. This is obviously not a typical situation, but in some cases, we have heard from officials in Louisiana about the Katrina disaster and officials in Oklahoma. The bulk of ER funding did not come for more than a year after the disaster. So we are working with our congressional delegation and our good partners at FHWA to ensure timely release of the funds. But regardless of the timing of the receipt of ER funds, MnDOT has adequate budget authority currently available to award all the contracts currently associated with the incident. This includes debris removal, the traffic restoration projects that have already begun, you saw many of them over the weekend, and for the bridge design and reconstruction. We will use the budget authority that you appropriated to MnDOT for state fiscal year 2008 for the state road construction budget. However, the additional budget authority will be needed to continue the regular program as currently planned, and we will work through the appropriate mechanisms to secure that additional budget authority and the cash resources to both meet our financial obligations and deliver the currently planned program. Finally, while there are many unknowns about the total cost associated with the bridge, as John just testified, we don't have a bridge design or a bridge build. The traffic restoration projects are changing on a day-to-day basis. It is possible that the total cost, including debris removal, site security, traffic restoration, and bridge replacement, could exceed $300 million. In that case, additional resources beyond the ER funds will be necessary to deliver the rest of the regular program. Now, I'm just going to say one brief thing, one minute worth of things about FEMA funding, because that may come into play, too. In addition to the ER funding, which is the program of the USDOT, Minnesota may receive FEMA Public Assistance Funds. The FEMA Public Assistance Program is the emergency response program of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and it is administered in Minnesota by the Department of Public Safety. The objective of the Public Assistance Program is to provide assistance to state and local units of government and certain limited nonprofit organizations to alleviate the costs incurred resulting from major disasters or emergencies declared by the President. The FEMA Public Assistance Program is intended to provide supplemental assistance to those costs not covered by the ER program, and acts such as first responders or emergency medical costs. As a result, our local partners are likely to be the primary recipients of those FEMA funds. Like ER, the FEMA Public Assistance Fund is a reimbursable program at a 75% of eligible cost rate. In order to receive FEMA funding, a disaster must be declared by the President of the United States, and our Department of Public Safety is currently working with our local partners and the affected agencies now to secure that disaster declaration.
Thank you, Ms. McKenzie. Mr. Sahibjan, would you just identify, I think, you know, we see some pictures with the design of the bridge. Talk about what the bridge is and what the design is. The basics, I think that's going to be some of the questions, and then I think we're open for questions.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think there are layouts out there, but the proposed structure is going to be a 10-lane structure, 5 lanes each direction, with a 13-foot and a 10-foot shoulder. The bridge, our plan is right now to have it separated about 8 feet so you can inspect the bridges with our snooper truck. And as far as the type of structure, that is left up to the design builder, who will help us determine what type of structure is going to be. I think we have it narrowed down into three or four types that it would be at this point. Steel and concrete.
Could you just mention the types? I think there's a concern whether it's an underdecked arch again or what on the clear span.
No, it would be either a plate girder, steel girders, individual steel beams, redundant structure. It could be a steel box, a trapezoidal shaped box, which I believe we don't have in Minnesota. Our bridge engineers in the audience too. And or it could be a concrete box similar to the Wabasha Street Bridge in downtown St. Paul, or the Wakota structure.
Okay, thank you. We have some number of questions. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my first question is for Ms. McKenzie. When you were talking about the potential cost of the replacement for the bridge, I've heard a lot of media conversation in the past couple days about whether or not consideration of future light rail transit would mean that we couldn't use the federal dollars at all. And what I'm seeing in the February or the August 10th letter that you passed out from the Federal Highway Administration is that added features could be added at state expense, but the federal government would limit its participation to replacing what we had. So my question to you is, is it your understanding that the state may add resources to this bridge if the state feels that further features are necessary for the long-term use of this bridge?
Yes, Representative Portman. The ER funds would still be available for that portion of the bridge that we're deemed to be replacement, and the state has the flexibility to add on top at there.
And at no risk of losing any federal dollars?
I don't know about
no risk.
It's a possible
decision. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Sahibjan, when you opened your comments, you said that the question was how fast. And I don't think that is the question, because I think everybody wants this built as quick as possible. The question is, when we build this 100-year bridge, will it meet the needs of this community for 100 years? And so I think we need to really keep that in mind, because when you start pouring concrete, it's kind of hard to make changes, from my experience. So I hope that the planning is done to meet the needs of the community. I did have a question for Mr. Chiglo with regard to design build. And I believe the Wakota Bridge was a design build project. Is that correct, Mr. Chiglo?
Mr. Chiglo?
I'll respond to those questions. No, the Wakota Bridge was a design bid build. It was a traditional type structure. No, I wish it was design build, to be honest with you. With regard to the 100-year comment, Mr. Chair, I cannot comprehend 100 years. I have no idea what's going to happen in 100 years. I can't comprehend what's going to happen in 50 years. When we say we design a bridge for 100 years, that's a number that is used because you're doing a large structure and you don't want to go in there and change it all the time. And so you design the structure. As far as the roadway goes, the roadway demand, the traffic forecast, that could make the bridge obsolete in 20, 30 years. I don't know what's going to happen at that time. So I know there will be LRT discussions later, and as a professional engineer, I can tell you that it would be my opinion. I think transit is part of this bridge, and it will be included as part of it. To have it as part of the structure itself, I think it's... the world changes so fast. I mean, you're going to make some assumptions in weight of the rail and what you're going to have in 50 years. And 50 years comes, and the engineer at that time will say, well, I don't know. I'm going to have to build something else. So there are, I'm not saying I'm against LRT or anything. We are all for it. I'm all for transit. It needs to be part of this. And we are looking at that in the department right now to give you solid engineering reasons, engineering numbers, and common sense, what we should do, how we should go forward. And so that's all I can say about the 100 years.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator Squay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Sahib Jab. With regard to the planning, you know, of course it can't be 100 years, but we can bring people together that understand the issues that growing communities and old communities face, and include that in this plan, and hopefully that's what's going to be done. This is not in my legislative arena, but I'm a state senator, and I certainly have concern that we build a bridge that is going to be fulfill the community needs. And I would hope that we take the time to do that. And with regard to the Wakota Bridge, if it was a traditional design bid project that has taken a lot of time. You know, we're about half done with that. There were problems with the first half. The second half isn't even started. I guess they're laying the ramps up to it, but I would certainly hope we do not see a repeat of that type of bridge project in 35W.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, my questions were kind of along the same line with design build. How was the design build process agreed upon?
Whoever wants to answer, I'll just let, rather than point it out, one of you are going to answer each time, I presume.
As the Department of Transportation and I don't consider myself expert, but we have a lot of experts that know how to deliver projects, and knowing the nature of this project and understanding that this is an emergency, federal representatives were in town to help us, give us federal dollars to deliver this project. I think the expectation is that those federal dollars be used in an emergency situation, which means you've lost a big part of your system. You need to put it back up as soon as you can. And as soon as you can, to me, is design build.
Mm-hmm. I'm not disputing that fact, but there's a process and statute by which design-build has to be, it has to go undergo a thorough examination of whether or not to select that method or not, and that's 161.3414, and I was wondering if those standards were met. There's about 10 criteria that need to be met. And also, then there's also the design build RFQ, the qualifications for the contractors, and then there's another series of about 10 parameters that need to be met. If your office can give us some written testimony in regards to those two sets of parameters being met, I'd greatly appreciate it. I think the rest of the committee members would too. Two other things quickly. Ms. McKenzie, your testimony, if we could get that in writing, whenever you get a chance, that'd be great. Thank you. The other thing on design-build, how many bridges have we built in Minnesota using design-build?
Mr. Chair, 79 bridges.
79 bridges. Are any of those bridges similar to the I-35 bridge?
No, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Sahibjum, is that
very good? Actually, very good.
Oh, really? On these other bridges that were built, are the same bidders bidding today that did work on those projects beforehand?
Mr. Chair, yes. Some of them are bidding. They have teamed up. Obviously, the teams are much bigger. Mm-hmm. And they are bidding. Two of the teams are local teams. Mm-hmm. And one of them is building the Crosstown project, and another one built the 494 design-build project. So we do have two local teams that are familiar with design-build.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, just a last question for right now. So you want to build this faster, ensure safety, and make sure the craftsmanship is A1. So I take it we're going to use union labor.
Mr. Chair, during construction, you mean, or
the prevailing wage, Mr. Chair, prevailing wage law, Davis Bacon will be incorporated into the contract.
Okay, thank you,
Representative Earhart.
I thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. I understand, Ms. McKenzie, that you can commingle state funds with federal if something besides this replacement of the bridge needs to be done with this thing. If we wanted to add two more lanes and then the 10 or something, we could commingle the funds and there's no problem with that.
The portion that the FHWA determines to be eligible would still be eligible. I'm looking at Tom here, but you know, the more complicated we make it, the more complicated it is for them to determine what's eligible, and that just slows down the process. But the part that they determined to be part of the replacement cost would be eligible.
Thank you. And one more question, Mr. Chairman. If you're going to go 10 lanes on this bridge, on the north end of it, I think the roadway comes down shortly after the end of the bridge to three lanes. That'd be 5 to 3. In other words, how do we squeeze that along? We paint some extra lanes like we did on Highway 100 underneath the bridge there, and that takes care of it, or what?
Ramp meter.
So the question is, how do we get the roadway from 5 lanes going north down to 3, which I think is what the roadway is now?
Mm-hmm. If you look at your, Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, if you look at your layout, 2 of the 5 lanes, as you're going north, you will lose them at the ramp, so the 3 lanes will match up with the 3 lanes going north.
Okay.
Let's see. That's not what I see on this thing, but all right.
Yeah. No. Represent Hornsky. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This would be directed perhaps at Ms. McKenzie. You said that this could quite possibly exceed $300 million, and that the state has to, in a sense, front the money in order to be reimbursed. What's the cash position of MnDOT at this point? Would you have to delay or cancel any projects? Because this is quite a bit of money, assuming there's no additional state support, which I think there would need to be, clearly, from what you testified to.
We are funding, if it comes on a timely basis, will total ultimately $250 million.
Ms. McKenzie, could you use the mic? Probably the mic.
Yeah, pull it. There you go. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, Representative. The federal funds currently authorized are $250 million. If they come on a timely basis, as we are urging our congressional delegation to make them and working with FXWA to make them, and the costs come in at approximately $250 million, we will be able to deliver the currently planned program. Well, I should just qualify that a little bit. If the costs come in over $250 million, we'll need additional resources to deliver the currently planned program. Now, I just wanted to say a little bit about delivering the currently planned program. There are a list of about, I don't know, a dozen or slightly more projects that MnDOT will not be doing that were in the currently planned program because they want to keep those lanes of traffic open in the detail roads while the bridge is down. The Larpinder Bridge is an example of one of those. It was a project that was in the program, planned in the program. They will not be doing that project this year because we need to keep that open for traffic. So the program will change a little bit in order to accommodate the changes in traffic that are happening. But other than that, we plan to deliver the regularly planned program.
You have follow-ups? Again, for the benefit of the presenters, I'm allowing you not to go through the chair, so just respond quickly so we don't have all this going back and forth. I think we can do it. Do you have follow-up?
Well, just very quickly, Mr. Chair, do you have an estimate of the MnDOT-related expenses for 280, the 94 reconfigurations, and then the salvage operations? How much is that going to run?
You know, I can get you those. I don't have them with me. I mean, the salvage is on a time and material basis. The estimate is $15 to $20 million. Those specific traffic projects, I don't have the cost.
Yeah, I don't have them with me either, but we can get that to you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's been, I'm going to have other questions, but I think we need to clear up something that's been kind of thrown out there a couple of times, and that's this emergency declaration from the governor. As I understand it, the emergency declaration was made, it was in effect for 7 days, and it was renewed by the executive committee. So the constitutional officers extended for 30 days. It expires sometime in early October. Early September. So I just need to understand the emergency declaration, what it means, what authorities the governor has, if the governor is designing and building this bridge, making use of those emergency powers, or are the emergency powers more reserved to literally the emergency response to the catastrophe, the public safety responders, securing the site, all of those sorts of operations, or is he using the powers granted to him under the state emergency declaration to design this and build this bridge in an expedited fashion, you know, moving pretty quickly through, you know, some of the niceties that go into developing a structure like this. Do we have an answer to that? Because I think that's been implied, and there's some confusion on the part of the legislature and the public.
Mrs. Higgins, is that a question for the attorney?
I don't have
an answer
for that either.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, that's an important question to have answered by someone who does know, because I think it's been implied that the governor is acting under emergency authority to design and build this bridge in an expedited fashion.
If I could take the opportunity, perhaps someone in the audience from the executive might be able to answer the question. Would there be someone in the audience that could address that question? not, we should, we'll find that one out. We'll have to get a hold of that one.
Thank you.
Representative Morgan?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a couple of follow-up questions to Representative Earhart's questions. I appreciate the response to Representative Earhart's concern about going from 5 lanes to 3 lanes and that 2 lanes peel off at the University Avenue and 4th Street exits. I've taken those exits many times myself going to the university, and I guess my personal experience is that even though there are 2 lanes, there are not always 2 lanes of traffic actually using those exits at any given time. Does MnDOT have capacity data, particularly during rush hours, showing that there will be 2 lanes of traffic exiting there on a regular basis, and therefore the capacity of the roadway after that point really will only be 3 lanes going from 5 to 3? Or in other words, are we creating a huge bottleneck here?
No, I don't think we'll be creating a huge bottleneck. We do have people who have answers to that if you'd like to, for us to respond, or I can provide the answer to you in writing at a later time as we go through the project delivery.
Thank you very much. I would appreciate that. And I guess an additional question about the number of lanes from Ms. McKenzie. It says in that sheet, I think Representative Hornstein mentioned earlier, added features such as added facilities not existing prior to the catastrophic failure, for example, additional lanes are commonly referred to as betterment. Going from 8 lanes to now 10 lanes, obviously it's already in the plan to add lanes, so that certainly is requiring an additional state investment above and beyond whatever we do end up getting from the federal government already, isn't that correct?
No. I can handle that. If you read that letter, it talks about bringing the dollars are eligible to build the structure and bring it up to current standards. And current standards would mean looking at the forecast, traffic forecasting. So, and that's for the fifth lane is eligible.
Thank you very much.
And sure. One thing, Mr. Chair, if I may add. You know, you were talking about commingling funds and adding more lanes and maybe paying it with state dollars. What that's going to do, it's going to trigger environmental review, possibly, and that will take a lot longer, I think.
Senator Barnhoff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have so many questions. I don't know where to begin, but I will just ask a couple and then assume that my colleagues will be asking questions that I may have as well. But I did appreciate Senator Skoy talking about the beginning of the hearing, beginning with the question, how fast can we build this bridge? Because I, too, wrote down in big letters, I don't believe that is the question here today. I think the question here today is around what kind of bridge is important for our future to meet the needs of today, but more importantly, to also serve the needs for tomorrow and beyond what we can envision. And with regard to that, I have been really surprised by the amount of media that has come out letting us know that LRT is no longer on the table. And so I was relieved, Mr. Sahib Jam. I was relieved to hear you say that you are still considering that, and I wondered first, and then I do have a question for Ms. McKenzie, if you could address why is it that in the press we are hearing that LRT is off the table, and then I wondered if that was related to the question Senator Dibble had about the emergency powers of the governor, if that would allow for making that kind of decision, because I would have thought that this type of committee would have some dialogue in that conversation.
The transit in general, the transit option has always been on the table, LRT and BRT and all of those. I think there are some preliminary indications that that shows. So first of all, there was a confusion about Central Corridor, whether Central Corridor is going to be rerouted, which is supposed to go over the Washington Avenue Bridge. That was one confusion, that whether that's the one that was going to route over 35. And that one became pretty obvious quickly that that's not the case. Maybe that's the reason that you're thinking the LRT was out, but it is the we are looking at it, and we are looking at whether it's again with engineering and common sense, whether it makes sense to have a LRT designed as an LRT or accommodated. Again, engineering does marvels. We can engineer anything, so that's not an issue.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And then a follow-up question to Ms. McKenzie. You mentioned that based on the amount of money that was appropriated for the 2008, that you actually have the money you need, and then in addition you said, but then you'd need to come back to us for the money that I assume what you're saying you would have spent that money on. So could you talk a little bit, say more about that process and how that, when you would need that money and how that money is available to you?
The typical process when you receive unanticipated federal funds, there are two processes. One, if you receive those when the legislature is not in session, you make an LRT request identifying the unanticipated federal funds. In this case, the $250 million ER fund. If the legislature is in session, you typically do that through a supplemental budget to give the additional spending authority to reflect the additional federal funds in place. Those would be the typical mechanisms for securing additional budget authority.
Senator Bonner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McKenzie, but with regard to your having access to the money today to cover those funds that will be coming in, and could you talk about your cash situation, how that might affect your day-to-day running of the MnDOT operations today?
There's a budget authority. We're at the beginning of the state fiscal year, and so the $550 million that you appropriated through the state road construction budget, you know, all but about $85 million of that is still available. We don't have a lot of letting this late in the summer because we let in the spring. So we will use that budget authority you provided to us to let these projects that are in the pipeline. And as the federal funds come in, we will seek the additional obligation authority for those federal funds so that we have enough spending authority to do these projects as well as our regular program. Is that anything?
If I may just interject, I hate to get in, but two questions I have. That federal funds, the authorization, the money isn't here yet, and if we don't have a special session, are you going to have a cash flow problem in the next month or two, or at any time?
The Office of Finance does the cash forecasting. I don't know, Scott, do you want to talk about this, or do you just... Why don't I cover it at a high level, and if they want to know a lot, I'll bring you up here. We do cash forecasting because there are two things. There is budget authority, there's your budget, but then there's your cash outlay. So every year, you know, our family has a budget for our total income, but every day it depends how much cash there is in the bank about the bill. So there's a cash issue and there's a budget authority issue. Our principal approach is there are two factors that will determine our cash situation. First, how fast will be the outlay of funds. Obviously, the big outlay of funds will be the design-build project. If the design-build project goes on a fast schedule and is actually awarded in September, that's one thing. If we slow down the design-build project in order to take more public involvement and consider these other options, that will put us in an entirely different cash position. The other factor determining our cash position is how quickly the federal funds come in. The $55 million of federal funds that are currently available helps our cash position quite a bit. But if at the fastest rate of expenditure, if everything goes as fast as possible, there would potentially be cash shortages sometime in the winter. And there are a number of mechanisms for dealing with that as well, and those are being explored right now. But there's a lot of gaps in that replacement.
center's quite to that point. Otherwise, we'd get back on.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there also not a problem on the end if the federal money takes as long to come back to Minnesota as it did to New Orleans, or you know, if it drags out a year or so, would that then also lead a problem on the other end?
If the federal funds are significantly delayed beyond this period in which we are going to be replacing and repairing the bridges, obviously all of the towns delivering regular program, all of them get greater, but we are being assured by our congressional delegation, and we have a very influential congressional delegation and our FHWA partners, that that will not be the case, and so that's what we're counting.
I'm running into problems here with trying to get everybody in. And again, if we could, is that to this point? In other words, with Senator Murphy?
Mm-hmm.
And
Mr. Yeah. Chairman and Ms. McKenzie, to that point, you know, there's been, the federal government is in a cliff in their funding, too, and in 2009 it drops off substantially. So if the congressional delegation is telling you that everything's hunky-dory, I would probably ask them again if that's really the case. But that's not the reason why I wanted to cut in here. You know, one, we still don't know what the overall project cost is, and if we're going to encumber a balance, the state basically has to have that money, resources someplace. So we kind of don't know what the big picture is. Are we estimating at a high level and saying we're going to encumber that balance according to state law by using some of the I don't know, unweave the weave money or whatever. Mm-hmm. Is that how we're encumbering that balance?
Well, we won't encumber, Mr. Chair, we won't encumber the full balance. We encumber funds as we actually award projects. And so as the projects are encumbered, they are awarded. We are in a period where there are not that many lettings planned until November. So at this point,
I get it.
It is taking a budget away from the regular program that can be backfilled by the ER.
As you can see, we have a number of questions. I went to the point we have. I have a lot of people: Portman, Nelson, Holberg, Dolphin, Youngbauer, Mola, Rest, Wilson, Larson, Housen, and a few more. So I want to get to the, if you have to the point, Representative Hart, otherwise we want to keep going.
I do have, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kinsey, I understand that $55 million has been released and that the balance of the money has been authorized but not appropriated yet. And you don't know when that's going to happen, given Congress's, or if they will do it all at once.
Yes.
Am I correct in what I say there?
Yes, that's correct. It's really been remarkable release and receipt of $55 million in ER funds is really a remarkable commitment by the U.S. DOT in anticipation of the authorization and appropriation. That's available. The remaining, well, the whole 250 has to ultimately be authorized and appropriated, but
it's been authorized but not appropriated.
Not appropriated, that is correct.
Determined to that point?
Senator Olson.
Yeah, I was trying to understand how they release money that has not been appropriated. Could you clarify that? If they're releasing $55 million that hasn't been appropriated, and Congress has been notorious for not appropriating everything they authorize, how much confidence do we have that they will, in fact, appropriate all that was authorized? So two parts to that. How does that release work if the appropriation hasn't occurred?
I'm going to turn this over to Tom Terrell.
And is that on a reimbursement basis also?
It's all on a reimbursement basis. Tom Terrell, the FHWA Division Administrator.
Tom. I can kind of explain where this is coming.
Would you identify yourself, sir?
Tom Sorrell, S-O-R-E-L, I'm the Federal Highway Administration Division Administrator in Minnesota.
Thank you.
The money that's been released thus far is essentially from a national account, emergency relief account, that the U.S. DOT administers. And that's how we're able to do this. Now, in that account, there's a lot of competing demands and needs, but we've made a decision to release that money from this national account. But we still fully expect that if the remaining 250 is appropriated, then that will happen. And then we'll be where we need to be. But that's where that money comes from. It's just from a national account that the USDOT manages for emergency relief efforts.
Thank you. That answer.
Thank you. Great.
Thank you, sir. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to say I'm glad to hear that the LRT or transit is being planned into this. I know I was told that when they did the Bloomington Ferry Bridge, that even though they don't have transit or LRT on there, that they put the footings in when they built it, so that for future planning, which is good, we're looking to the future expansion. I guess getting back to this $250 million, this is being spent, we're already spending some of this on the road restructuring of the other projects. And I guess, where does this money come from? Is this going to come out of our future money we get from the U.S. government, or is this money on top of what we would have normally gotten? I mean, are we going to pay this back in future budget years?
Representative, you know, this is additional money. This is a special program for the USDOT, especially for emergency relief. And this would be in addition to a regular federal fund appropriation.
Okay. Representative Nelson, I think that's on a reimbursement basis. Is that correct? ER monies are usually reimbursement, so...
Okay.
All on a reimbursement basis, so we haven't been reimbursed for any costs yet, but the $55 million is available to reimburse.
Okay. Senator, Representative Nelson?
Yes, and Mr. Chair, thank you. Now, this normally, this is a 90-10 split, so we have to pick up 10% like on normal federal, or that they're going to pick up 100% of this, or any additional things we do, we're going to pick up ourselves. How does this work on this bridge?
No, Representative, the ER program is typically 100% reimbursable for eligible costs in the first 180 days, and then it would be 90-10 on an interstate project or 80-20 on another federal aid project. But in Minnesota's case, that authorization bill that was passed by Congress and signed by the President actually eliminated that match. And so the whole $250 million is 100% reimbursable for eligible costs.
One more question, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Sahibjam, I butchered that, but we've had discussions in the last year about the little project that was in my district that got put off because of Crosstown. How is this going to affect other projects? I guess I know you said that there are some projects that you're going to delay because you want to use them for detours and whatnot, but how is this going to, in the long run for our projects, if we don't get additional money into the system, how is this going to affect these other projects that are out there? I mean, are we looking for unlimited delays on these projects, or can we look forward to these getting back on track and getting done, the other projects we have done, other bridges that we need to replace?
Yeah, I think it's hard to say that right now, because we have to see, first of all, what the number will be and what it will cost us, and plus there are some, you know, we're working with the city of Minneapolis to work on a couple of other projects, I mean, that's related to this bridge on the north and the south side that the city would like us to consider in advance. So we need to work with them. So I don't know how those will impact. I'm sure we'll be working with our planning programming folks and the region to make those decisions.
Senator Salford?
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here today. I know you have a very, very big workload, and I appreciate all that the DOT staff is doing. But I do have some difficult questions that I wouldn't be responsible to my constituents if I didn't ask. Representing the southeast area of the metropolitan area, the last time that MnDOT built a major bridge across the river, it was the Lakota Bridge, is my understanding. And within months of that bridge being open, cracks were found in the bridge. and restructuring was taking place. It was re-engineered. And I had a constituent call me this morning, and as he's driving to work, he sees the construction company finishing their part of this, laying pavement with the ramps and the lanes that were supposed to go to a bridge that has not been completed, so we have roads that are driving off a cliff. So I'm going to ask a difficult question, because this is what I'm hearing. I'm hearing from people across my district. I've been out quite a bit talking with people in the summer, and they come to me and they ask, and we see this in our newspapers, is this going too fast? If we can't build a bridge in 3 to 5 years, why do we think we can do it now in overdrive? And are we going to be able to have the oversight? Do we have the management to be able to see this project? I know it can be difficult for you to say, yes, we do, but I think that's what the public is asking. And why does it have to be so fast? Because people are uncomfortable, and they want to make sure that this built, that this bridge is done right, and that we consider some of the options. We've heard a lot of discussion today about we want to have a bridge that is built for the future. We've heard about a bridge for the 21st century. Well, if it's a 100-year bridge, we're talking about a bridge to the 22nd century. So I just need some assurance, and maybe you can't do all of that today. But I'm just relaying to you what I'm hearing. I'm hearing it from everyone I talk to. It just feels like it's going way too fast, and people are concerned because the track record right now isn't all that great in my community.
Mm-hmm. The reason there was cracks on the Wakota Bridge was not because we were building it fast or anything like that. I know people have talked to you about being nervous about going too fast. You said you're on the southeast side. I'm on the southwest side, and I'm actually hearing a lot of people telling me that, wow, you guys can do it in 1 year, more power to you, and do it. So the mechanism is there, and we can do that. John mentioned a little bit about the quality control and how we can beef up that process to make sure that something like that doesn't happen. The engineers, the design team will have their own peers reviewing their work, and we will have oversight. We will have an independent consultant that will also do the same thing, so similar things won't happen. And the Wakota Bridge, we can talk about that in a different session. There's a lot to say about that one. That project, I'd love to get it done as fast as we can. We have the money set aside for it, ready to go. So we have issues with the contractor. I think we've talked about that plenty of times. I think the difference here is that in this case, there's a bridge in the water. There's a big gap in the system. The Wakota Bridge right now, we have the westbound open. By all means, it's not complete. The westbound bridge, its traffic is moving fairly well, but I know that'll change, and we need to stay focused on doing that bridge. And you have my word, and I think the commissioner has dedicated dollars to and commitment to finish to complete that work. So I hope I answered your question somewhat.
Well, I just want to make a point that I didn't say that, because it was built too fast. It was built, sort of the way we tended to build bridge. And I guess the concern is that if that can happen when a bridge is built on a normal schedule, that's the concern of people, that as it's being designed and as we move forward, we have safeguards when something is being done on the fast track. That's my point.
As part of design build, the contractors do have a goal in the quality oversight, but MnDOT will also be there. There will be multiple levels of redundancy also in the construction aspect to verify that things are being followed as they should be. And so I think we're very confident we can get a high-quality project through a design build process in a timely manner. And we recently met with all the design build teams, and we posed the question about the time frame, because obviously we knew that there was some concern. And without hesitation, every one of those teams validated our expectation that this bridge could be completed by the end of next year. Now, all of these teams have, there's five teams that are interested in this project, and there's contractors from around the nation that have come come to our aid to help repair this bridge and reconstruct it. And they are also taking a risk in doing this job. They've dedicated a huge number of people, and I've been told yesterday one team in particular has assigned 50 designers and estimators to manage this project and develop their process or their proposal for us. And part of that risk that they've taken on is that in order to come to our aid, they've passed on other work that's available out there too. So we have definitely seen a great commitment from the construction community to come to our aid. They also understand the importance of building a quality project. They know these contractors that are coming to help are familiar with emergency contracts such as this. They've worked on projects in California and Louisiana and Oklahoma and repaired these and reconstructed bridges like this in similar instances under similar time frames. So, you know, those bridges were built, and I don't know for sure, but I'm sure that the quality is there, and I'm confident that the quality will be here when we're done on this job.
Thank you.
Representative Charlesman, I'd just like to point out, we haven't really been in the design build, but what he didn't tell you, and which we should say, there are incentives built into the contract, and any time you'll pay for it, we'll probably can get it. So that's the question I have concerned about, again, the cost, not that there's anything wrong with the design build, but we have not discussed the differential in the cost. Senator Olson, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Senator Saltzman's point, are the difficulties that you're experiencing with some of the current projects that Senator Saltzman has identified having any impact on the parameters that you're setting, either for the design or for the materials used to give some assurance that path won't be followed in the rebuild of I-35W bridge?
As you know, the reason there was a problem, and I'm assuming you're talking about the same project, Wakota, what happened there was it was a design issue. It was done by a consultant, and did not have the review mechanism in place, and there was something missed. So we, as part of our, ever since that happened, we're asking our consultants and our bridge engineers here who can help with us, especially with bridges, that we do have these review mechanisms in place, especially for bridges like this. And this one will have, within the team, we will have that. And we, as John said, we will have our own independent oversight team that will help us, our own people plus maybe a consultant that will help us review that. Believe me, we don't want anything like that again, ever.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a few comments and a couple questions. First of all, thank you for the rapid response. It's my understanding that within minutes there were cones on the way out to mark the detours, the closed ramps, in a very stressful situation, using your state-of-the-art traffic management center. You guys did great, and thank you. There's been a lot of talk today about cost, and I'm a little emotional about this. Minnesota prides itself on taking care of its own, being hard workers, doing what's right, and for us to be in a position where we have to accept large amounts of money from the federal government to help us is not one that many of us are used to. And so I have some concerns in that I believe the nation is watching how we will spend their money, and that we have to be very careful that we're prudent about that. The interstate system is just that, an interstate system. And you testified that there were nearly 6,000 trucks crossing on this interstate system on a daily basis. And I'm wondering, number one, can you quantify the cost to the business community or the economic system of the region, the state, and if in fact the nation of having this major artery severed. In other cities that have an E and a W, the trucks can transverse either side without being stopped. In our particular system, because of the practice freeway, the trucks don't have that option of just heading up the east side versus the west side. That is the major north-south artery through this region. So the cost to commerce, and also I want this to happen in a rapid fashion because I think that it's important for a lot of reasons. I don't think we've even begun to see the traffic impacts with the university not being open, the fact that we have no snow, we've had virtually no rain. I think that it's remarkable the amount of red on the TV. Many of us turn on our TV, the first thing we do is look for the traffic patterns in the morning. But I think it's going to get a lot more challenging for a number of reasons. Do you have an ability to delineate not only the cost to commerce in the region economically, but also the cost to the project itself? I mean, if we're looking at a project with hundreds of millions of dollars, matters of weeks or months delay have obviously have to add cost to the project as a result of just simple inflation costs, if you will. And, I mean, I want to make sure that this bridge meets the needs of the local community as well, stretching all the way to the interstate system that we're a part of. But I think that there's a delicate balance there, a matter of a couple of weeks delay in taking a look at this. That's probably reasonable. Delaying this by months and having a long, protracted municipal consent process, et cetera, I think it's going to be very devastating not only to the region economically, but also, like I said in the beginning of my comments, the nation will be watching how we spend their money. And I think it's important that we really strive to be very effective and efficient with what we do. And then, you know, those are my two questions, quantifying those costs. And then, Chair Leader, you talked about the using design build and the cost savings, and I think they have figures on previous projects that have used design build and what the cost savings were on those projects.
Yes, President, thank you very much for the nice comments, first of all. Yeah, we are able to, and we do have those costs because we know exactly what the value of a trip is, what the value of a commerce trip is. It would be interesting if we had the trucking folks here or Minneapolis business folks here. I haven't talked to them. I don't know what they're saying, but I'm sure they would have their views on this also. And maybe Abby, do you want to add to this as far as the economic benefits?
I just wanted to say that the Department of Trade and Economic Development is actually undertaking kind of a broader economic impact study right now, and that MnDOT staff are aiding them with. So a really sensible estimate of the full economic impact will probably be 2 to 4 weeks out. But they're significant. The direct road user cost we have estimated to be $400,000 a day in lost time and increased vehicle operations costs for cars and trucks in the region.
Mr. Chair, if I might,
just
to follow up from the gentleman who's is it Mr. Chickwell? He was on the 212 project, and he might be able to spend a minute and talking about that project and the cost savings and where they are on the timeline currently as opposed to where they thought they were going to be when they started.
Yeah, I don't deny their cost savings. I'm also, I guess that we haven't really debated the issue of design build. That's not my intent with it. I recognize their cost savings. But any time you're going to do this project, whether you do it design build or standard construction method, you're going to save some costs as quickly as you can do it. There's no doubt about it. It's an economic effect. But I think there are other issues within that. Senator O'Lean, you had a question, a follow-up, I think, on that.
Yes, Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Along those lines, I've heard a number of comments about beefed up oversight with independent consultant, problems with the current project, consultant myth. I think this plays right into the question that Congressman Oberstar had about downsizing a MnDOT's engineering staff. So I don't know who would be the appropriate person to answer this, but the question is, has MnDOT downsized their engineering staff, and has it affected the ability of MnDOT to oversee the work? Because I'm hearing that a lot of this stuff is being jobbed out, and I don't think I can understand a county jobbing out a bridge engineer, but for the state of Minnesota, I would think the state would be big enough to have in-house engineers on those type projects.
Yes, thanks for the question. Whenever you have a large project like this, it's we have a certain amount of staff, and we have capable staff. Whenever you have a large project, you do need help from the industry, and they are extensions, our consultants, some of them may be here. They are extensions of the department, and we do need their help. As far as this project goes, our bridge office will be, our folks will be involved with this project. But the project is so big, and it's going to go fast where they can't devote all their folks. So we do need outside consultants to help us. There's a great level of expertise there. Yeah, it brought to my attention that, and that's through being an old bridge engineer. I worked in the bridge office with the department, on a large project like this, normally you will see that they're always farmed out to consultants. I recall, and our bridge engineer can correct me if I'm wrong, but when we designed the Stillwater Bridge way back in 1995, there was two versions designed. The steel option was designed by MnDOT, and the concrete one was designed by a consultant. So sometimes we can do that. But it takes great resources.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I did have a first part, and that was, is it in fact that MnDOT is downsizing the engineering staff? Could you answer that, or somebody answer that one?
I'm not aware of any official notices that say we're downsizing.
Is there in place a chief engineer at this time?
We have a deputy commissioner, a very capable person that's able to run the department. And we have many, many engineers, technical experts, who she and the commissioner rely on their expertise. That would include myself.
So there is no chief engineer at this time. Is that correct? Is that what I'm hearing?
Not in a traditional way, no.
Mr. Sahidjum, may I just ask a question? In the last year, did you lose some of your bridge engineers in the department on early outs of retirement in the last year or so?
In the Metro District, no, we don't have bridge design in our district. Bridge design is a central function. And yes, we always have attrition, and some people have retired. However, we have a grad program, as you know, which is a feeder system, a grad engineers that we hire from the university.
I didn't mean within your district. I meant within the central office in the bridge section.
Yes, there's my partner Dan Dork in the state bridge engineer. He can answer that question.
Chairman, leader, and members of the committee, I think your question was, have we regarding staffing levels.
Would you identify yourself to?
Dan Dorgan, I'm the state bridge engineer for MnDOT. Regarding staffing levels, I think, you know, in general, the department over the last few years, we have had some retirements, all of which have not been replaced. So our staffing level, if I go back probably 7 years ago, I think we were about 113 people roughly. At the moment, we're about 101, 102 people within the bridge office. But, you know, those are a mix of engineers, administrative people, technicians. So I don't have an exact count on engineers off the top of my head, but I just know the general office number.
Mr. Dorman, are basically that staff, is that a new staff, or they've been with the department, your top level bridge design people?
No, many of our bridge design people have, I don't think there's the average age is probably about the same. We have had retirements, but of course over the years we have also hired. So we have engineers that have been on staff actually one is since 1960. So it runs the gamut of age.
Thank you, Mr. Dorman. Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a follow-up way back when I asked my first question, so this is my follow-up. I think there's a concern that I'm hearing among the members of the public that our vision for this bridge sounds like it's constrained to the federal dollars available. And what I think you're hearing from these two committees today is that the state is prepared to play a financial role in building a bridge that would serve Minnesotans for the future. And so what I want to ask is your vision for this bridge, or is the administration's vision for this bridge, constrained by the federal dollars that are being made available?
The capacity, if you're referring to the capacity of the bridge, the process that's being used to develop the capacity or to determine what the capacity of the bridge will be is the same that we would use on any bridge or river crossing. We project out 20 years, and that is something that we check our traffic out 20 years to help us identify the number of lanes that are needed. And so, if that is allowable under the ER funding program to account for, the traffic increase. So we are accommodating the future growth as far as the bridge reconstruction, and that's allowable. But it is limited under the ER provision.
Representative Hartman, I just wanted to follow up with that. We can go through a process of determining bridge structures for months, and we do that sometimes. And this structure will not be any, will be probably as pretty as the Lakota Bridge or the Wabasha Street Bridge, or if it's a steel structure, that'll be a beautiful structure too. I'm not sure what else we could do to make it, unless it's a suspension type bridge, which will triple, quadruple the cost, and I don't know what that is.
Specifically, I'm not talking about beauty, I'm talking about functionality. And I guess the concern that I have comes out of this August 10th letter from the Lieutenant Governor and the Chair of the Met Council, talking about how there can be no consideration of making the bridge strong enough to withstand light rail transit in the future, even though it's not compatible for the Central Corridor, because that would entail undue cost implications. And I guess my concern here as a state legislator, what's our job? Our job is to write the checks, right? We control the checkbook. And what I'm not hearing from MnDOT is that we need a check from you. We need authorization to spend the money that we need to make a bridge for the future. What I hear is the federal money that's available is this. What we can do with the federal money is this. I agree with Representative Holberg. The nation is watching what we're going to do with their tax dollars. I think they're not going to be real thrilled if we build a bridge that maybe meets our needs for 10 or 20 years but doesn't meet our needs in the future. And as a taxpayer in the state of Minnesota, I'm willing to participate in paying for this bridge if by doing that we can get a bridge that withstands the test of time in terms of its functionality. I would also say that the bridge should be a beautiful and fitting memorial to the people who lost their lives there. And I certainly think that I'm hearing that from Minnesotans, on the call and radio programs, even some very conservative people saying this bridge should be a real statement, especially considering the loss of life. But I'm concerned that the amount of money available is driving what we're considering. And I'm concerned because that's the way it seemed like we were doing the transportation budget before this catastrophe, where we say, we have X number of dollars available so we can do this. And what I'm concerned about is that perhaps we didn't talk about what do we really need, and then talk about how much money we should make available. How much money do we need to make sure these bridges are safe? And then asking for that money. And so my concern is that we're doing it backwards. We're saying we have this much money so we can make a bridge like this. And what I'm asking you is that how we're thinking about this bridge? Is that how the administration is thinking about this bridge? And I'm telling you that we're open to thinking about it in a different way of saying, first, what do we need? And then how much money would that cost? And if that's an unbearable cost, then we can scale back what we're talking about. But I want to know that the dollars available from the federal government aren't limiting our consideration.
Looks like my boss is here to help respond to this, but I'll say one thing. I'll repeat it again. I think anything that we do that will be above and beyond what we are doing, which incorporates the future forecasts of traffic and transit. It will be a state-of-the-art bridge, and anything else, anything above and beyond that you do, it will trigger environmental process. It'll delay this whole process by at least a couple of years. And with regard to the nation watching us, I totally agree with you. And the longer we talk about it, the more CNN will be watching us, and then they'll know about us.
Before we get any further, it's just about normally our committee time, but we have Jungbauer, Moa, Rest, Olson, Larson, Hausman, Representative Carlson, Scoy, Dibble, Senator Carlson, Solberg, and I think we'll cut off the questions at this point, and conferring with Senator Murphy, we will probably have a hearing, continued hearing next week, because we didn't even get involved with Mr. Bell and Mr. Lamb, I believe, unless there's some problem with the committee. But from this, I just wanted to announce that to the committee, because I think we probably won't run too much longer, but we want to get through all these people that asked the question, and we'll cut it off.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Sahijam, in the legislature we have a very open process, and if CNN wants to come and watch, that's fine. Let them. Maybe they'll take some lessons from Minnesota home to the rest of the nation on open air government. And the reason why we're here is because we don't know the information that y'all do. We want to help. That's why we're here. We want to help. If it was up to us, we'd write a big old check, and we'd send you out of here with $500 million just to make sure that you got the bridge built that we all believe that we need. So we're not trying to be confrontational at all, but there's just a lot of questions that need to be asked. And I know from just the phone calls that I get, that the public has not, you know, they haven't warmed up to the idea of building it at such breakneck speed. I think it can be done, and I think it can be done safely, efficiently, and in the correct manner. But we just need a little bit of time to talk about it, and a week or two is not going to, you know how it is. Weather can be a bigger determination than the legislature. Let's just put it that way.
And we can. Did you have some comment? Are you Ms. Freeze?
Ms. Freeze.
Mm-hmm. Chair Leader, Chair Murphy, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Freeze, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Transportation. Just a couple of comments that I wanted to make to capitalize on a couple of points that Connie, as I know him, referred to. That we just want to make sure that you're aware of. I understand, and I'm very pleased by the comments here today that you want to help us and you want to come to our aid in terms of figuring out the right solution. And believe you me, over the past week and a half, our folks have been working hard at figuring out the right solution. And the issues that we are grappling with are not just money. It's a schedule issue, and I know that we could slow this down for a month or two, and we probably still could complete the bridge fairly quickly. But when we start talking about some of the major betterments that people are contemplating, we kick in a much more extensive environmental process, the process that typically takes us 18 months to 3 years to complete. And so that's probably as big a driver in our quest for deciding what's appropriate to do with this project as anything else. So I just want to bring that to your attention. We're happy to have that discussion with you to help inform you more of that. I think there's a lot of good questions that are being asked about the future, and I think that there are appropriate things for us to address. I think we can do those in a fairly timely manner with you, but we'd ask that you also be cognizant of when we start adding some of these things, at least in this initial phase, that we could draw out this process, not a couple months, but maybe a couple of years. And I just want to make you aware of that.
Along that same, Mr. Sahid Jabran or Lisa, you're still using the same footprint. You're concerned about the environmental effect on the extent outside of the bridge, I presume. Is that correct? Because you're going to 10 lanes right now, and if you have that footprint and you're okay, you aren't really, with some of the enhancements, which I'm not saying you should have or not, but being discussed there within that structure. Your environmental concerns are beyond the structure, basically, right?
Some of the questions, and I'm not sure what specifically you're referring to, but even if we increase the footing size of the bridge to handle the extra capacity that would be needed for light rail, that could possibly, most likely, will trigger a longer environmental review process. Even though the bridge may physically be the same width on the surface, 10 lanes, 13-foot shoulders on the outside, 10-foot on the inside when we build it in its initial state, because we're doing additional work in the river to increase the foundation size to potentially accommodate that, the information that we have available from the Federal Highway Administration is that that would then most likely result in us moving into an environmental assessment type process.
We have a couple of follow-ups. Representative Murphy?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Fries, maybe, and I think the cheerleader is going to announce here shortly that we'll probably meet again next Thursday. Maybe next Thursday you can clarify your answer a little bit more, talk with the feds, find out exactly what would trigger this. My understanding is we're not putting anything in the river. I didn't believe that we were going to be disturbing the river. I might... Okay.
Actually, just led you, but yeah, here's in the foundation on the edge of the river where the impact is.
Right. Well, if we get some clarification on that, that'd be great. Thank you.
And along that line, when we're considering that, my understanding, they're expediting this project based on a lot of waivers, and maybe have you reviewed the consideration for a waiver with the environmental, or is that part of it?
That is one thing, Representative Leader, I would like to clarify, because there has been some misinformation that's been generated. There have been no waivers to the environmental review process. There's been expedited processes to help us get to the point where if we move forward with what's being proposed, I think the FHWA is prepared to sign a categorical exclusion. But that expedited process has been because our partners at the national and local level have been working hard with us to get through those review processes, which normally take an extended period of time. And they've done them in an expedited manner, but they have not waived any requirements.
Senator Dibble and Senator Orfman, do you have follow-up to this? Because we should get...
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to emphasize again the points that have been made earlier by others. No one in this room is looking to add 2 years to this process. And to raise the specter of adding 2 years to this process is a red herring. And so I wish people would dispense with fighting that. We are all here motivated to get this bridge built and get it built the right way. And I will say that again and again. I will hold town hall meetings with my state representative, Frank Hornstein, until he gets the appropriate amount of public planning process to make use of all of us in this room to do that. My city needs to know that it has an appropriate level of input into the process. If we actually, there's some concern that some preliminary design is going to be submitted officially this Friday to Minneapolis, that they will have to react to for municipal consent, absent any meaningful input. So next week might not be soon enough for us to meet again, Mr. Chair. So
So to raise the specter of 2 years delay without appropriate level of input and consideration actually would only trigger the kind of delay that Representative Holberg was concerned about. If we don't provide for the kind of input that people need, that will cause the delays we all fear, because people will have to reach for the only tools they have available to them, and that causes delay.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Senator Ortman?
Chairman Leader, there is another misconception, is that we have not been working with the city or county at all. And since this tragedy occurred 2 weeks ago, we have been working very closely with the city in developing the layout that you have in front of you. And the issue with LRT has come up here, and that's been a discussion, but the geometrics of the roadway, the city has been very involved in developing that, and I don't think it's been mentioned here, but that geometric layout or the number of lanes does accommodate bus rapid transit or managed lanes in the future. And Connie mentioned earlier that it's managed or accommodated transit. But we have been working very closely, Saturdays, Sundays, during the week, over the phone. And it's been an expedited process, but it shouldn't be perceived that we have been ignoring the city and the county and their input.
Well, Mr. Chair, I get a slightly different message from my friends, officials at the city, in which they understand routes are going to be dead-ended, you know, local streets are going to be cut off, you know, this consideration of what this bridge is going to mean for local access and regional access, you know, and there was actually some fear that the design in the preliminary stage was going to be submitted for municipal reaction last Friday. Now, you know, that no one seems to know exactly when it's going to be submitted. It's going to be this Friday or next Friday. You know, we really need to take a breath and really involve meaningfully local officials and the public. The only hearing I'm aware of is happening in Roseville. There's an armory just a few blocks up the way, in which Minneapolis residents could get to their plan to provide for access for Minneapolis residents to react to the input and take their hearings.
Senator Ortman.
Chair, we have been working very close with city staff. They have had a lot of input into the development of this layout and the plan that you have in front of you.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank the members of MnDOT for being here. These have been very difficult days in the state of Minnesota for the employees of MnDOT as well as everybody else. And I'd like to remind people this is day 15. And the progress that's been made has been extraordinary. And I think you all have done an extremely good job of coordinating the federal agencies that are here in the state of Minnesota, the Federal Highway Administration and FEMA. I know you're coordinating their efforts. I know you're coordinating with the local governments that have been affected by this. You're coordinating with the National Transportation Safety Board. And so you've done an extremely good job, and Minnesotans can be very proud of the work you've done. You've got a design for us to look at on day 15. You're starting public hearings, and I think you're doing a very good job. I think I, for one, can say I have great confidence in Mr. Tiggle. He's been working as the project manager out in my district on the 212 project for a while. It's a design-build project. He's working in my backyard, and they've done a fabulous job of working with TASCA and Chanhassen and the other affected communities, and we have the best from Minnesota as our project manager on this bridge, and I think that's a great accomplishment. I'm very comforted by the fact that he's going to be working on this project, and I just want to say I'm very proud of MnDOT. I think Minnesotans are very proud of MnDOT and the efforts that you've made so far, and I know that this has been a very difficult time for you, so I want to say thank you.
And
Mr. Chair, one more thing. Thank you for the comments. In order to make this job a success, I don't think MnDOT or anybody, the contractor or the cities or counties, failure is not an option when it comes to this project. And in order for it to be successful, the cities and counties are going to have to be there as partners. And I think that's the role and that's the position, and that's the way we've been approaching this since I started working on this job 2 weeks ago. And in order for it to continue to be a success and to realize the successes that we've been able to achieve to date, we're going to have to continue that process. It's not going to stop at municipal consent or the letting. It's going to have to continue through the construction and then we reopen and get this bridge servicing our residents again. So it's not going to be you know, we're going to communicate with the city and the county now, and then and not ignore them afterwards. We're going to continue that collaboration and cooperation and communication with them through the duration of this project.
I have Representative Earhart and Senator Rest, and I think we're probably, if could you three or Ms. McKenzie come back next week, probably on Thursday or on a Tuesday in the afternoon?
Mr. Chairman, is there any reason why we couldn't have it earlier in the week rather than later in the week?
The co-chair may not be here. Otherwise, that's why I was wondering why Tuesday or Thursday said he could be here, right?
Tuesday? Maybe Tuesday.
He said be okay, he won't be here. We could... We'll discuss that and we'll let the members know. Right now, unless you want to go further, I think we will take these questions. I do have Youngbauer, Moeller, Rest, Olson, Larson, Hausman, Representative Carlson, Spoy, and Dibble, and Senator Carlson, Solberg.
You
if it's a real urgency, otherwise
we can pick me off the list.
We'll get to next week.
I'll pass
yeah.
Well, I just passed the rest, and I'll take Earhart and Rest.
I think people are getting hungry, Mr. Chair.
These are follow-ups, basically, that Representative Earhart had and Senator Rest, at least. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are talking, kind of focusing on a timetable here, so I was wondering if any of you could tell us when the governor indicated when he will be calling a special session to deal with this issue.
That's something that I don't know.
Well, how can anybody else hear?
Senator,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not particularly interested in ending this hearing on a sour note. However, a bridge did fall in the river. And even though that topic is not for this committee, it certainly is in the back of my mind when I think about the bridge that's going to be built in its place. And so I still have, between building it fast and building it right, that equal sign has a big question mark over it. And just as we're going to have, and I'm sure there's going to be, I hope there's going to be, a lot of redundancy in the building of this bridge, in the actual construction of it, I'm going to need a lot of redundancy in assurances that building it fast equals building it right. And I, for one, am not there yet.
Senator Moore, do you want to get something?
Mr. Chair, if we're going to have another hearing, I have a list of a request for information that perhaps the testifiers could just either forward to the committee or bring with them. We've heard lots of conversations about the eligible expenses that would be reimbursable with this $250 million. If you could supply us perhaps with the parameters of what these eligible reimbursable expenses are in writing, that would be very helpful. And then of these eligible expenses, if you could delineate how much of those expenses is actually direct cost to the construction of the structure of the bridge, and how much are other expenses that doesn't relate to the bridge construction. And then if you have an estimate on sort of the parameters that you've put around, put out to the teams that are bidding the project, what are the parameters, what are the price tags that we're looking at. And then finally, if you could provide to us a list of projects that will be displaced and in other consequential projects that will be displaced in the MnDOT program sort of over the next 10 years as a result of taking the cash to front load the construction of the bridge so that we can all have an idea of what the delay is going to be in the other projects. That would be very helpful.
Yes.
Can I ask for one
yes.
clarification?
Right.
Senator Moss, you asked about the eligible items and the parameters of the cost.
We did hand out the memo or the letter from FHWA, Tom Terrell. Are you asking for more detailed information than what's in that particular memo?
Mr. Chair, yes. My understanding is that not all of the... I keep hearing today that we have $250 million for construction of a bridge. And I'm not quite sure if we actually do have $250 for the actual construction of the bridge. And so I just want to hear what MnDOT has determined to actually, of that $250, what will go to other expenses and how much will actually be left over for the construction of the bridge, and then what we will have to put in once we've expended all the $250 million from the state.
The one point I will make is that money pays for more than just the construction of the bridge.
That's correct.
And we can bring to you at the hearing next week what we have to date and what we know are eligible items for that particular funding pot of money.
Well, and Mr. Chair, the reason why I ask that is that just given what we've done so far, we may have already expended a lot of that $250 that's there. So realistically, we're looking at constructing a $300 million bridge, but if so far the reimbursable expenses are eligible that we've spent already is about $200 million or whatever that number is, in reality, we can't count too much on the $250 when we actually get into the construction of the bridge. And I would like a layout of what those costs are going to be.
Thank you. I think we'll cut it off here. And again, we don't want to, I don't think any of the committee members are, yes.
Excuse me.
Excuse. We would like to make a couple announcements if the audience could prevail a bit. We're not infringing on the quality or the technical aspect of MnDOT. In fact, I think we all appreciate the quality of work and the people that are working there. There's no doubt about it. I don't think we'd ever, anyone that's worked with them would recognize anything differently. So basically, we're asking some tough questions, and those are not, I hope they're taken in the light that the obligation we have as a legislature. Senator Murphy would like to make a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, just quickly, I know that Senator Jungbauer had a request for information that he wanted to make here. If you have information or if you have a request for information, see Ms. Freeze or somebody else in the department. They'll get you the information. Let's try to keep this conversation going back and forth. I think the more that we know and understand about this project, the more comfort that we are going to have and the more comfort we'll be able to express to the public. So let's try not to get too caught up in some of the externalities, and let's just try to take care of business. Thank you.
And watch your emails. We don't know quite if it. Probably you'll try to shoot for a Monday or Tuesday meeting next week.
That'd be great.
Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.